and you're still tuning to your superstation Joy 99.7 FM. It's time for Home Affairs. And today, by popular request, we are bringing back a conversation titled Dealing with Suspicious Mistrust and Insecurities. It's hosted by Edem Naiti. Do enjoy this playback.
That I want to find out is generally how do these things come about? Well, I mean, when we meet to start off a relationship, it's a very white, beautiful, clean slate. You haven't offended me, I haven't offended you. We have met each other, probably we've been friends, and then eventually it grows into an amorous relationship, and we're looking to probably grow it, or we are even married, right? And then all of a sudden, the slate or this clean sheet, we're still having spots and dents on it. That's beginning to, you know, worry the relationship. How do they come about?
Interesting, the way you put it. Trust Edem. When you think she's going to ask what is insecurity, she's like, how do they come about? Well, but that's a good way to put it. I mean, like you're saying, we meet people, and for the first time, we don't know anything about them. Mm-mm. They don't know anything about us. We go into a friendship, and along the way, we feel they will do something to harm us, or what they are doing is going to harm us. How do these things come about? So insecurity first is a lack of assuredness or a feeling of inadequacy about oneself in some parts of your life, in some areas of your life. Everybody will have insecurity in some areas of their life. But when it comes to relationship and why people tend to now feel insecure, it starts from experiences we've had and things that we think if people do it, it means they are going into something we've experienced before. Most of the time, we are thinking about something we've already experienced, a pattern we've seen in someone, and it caused a fear in us, or it hurt us somewhere. So if we see anybody doing something similar to that, it touched on that fear of I'm inadequate in this thing, that's why this person is going to do this. So over the years, maybe you've married for 10 years, but now you feel like your partner doesn't trust you, or you don't trust your partner because of something they did. Maybe because they didn't answer their calls continuously for 1 hour, you start thinking, oh, the last time I was in a relationship and somebody started not answering their call, this was the consequences that came. So you start bringing up all these memories. But the whole point is, what makes you feel that you are inadequate to trust that person? I think that is where my concern is. Why are you feeling inadequate to trust the person for whatever reason? And it tends to be a lot of things that happens in our life over the years. Sometimes the first relationship you have actually sets the tone for how you function in every relationship you go to. The first relationship you have, it becomes how you see relationship, how you respond, how you react. So the whole process is to make sure that, am I the same person I was in that relationship that I'm coming into this one with? Because if not, you're looking at this person in the same lens you were looking at whatever happened in the other relationship. So mistrust and insecurity and suspicions all come from the fact that you feel inadequate about something about yourself, and you think, because I'm inadequate, this person will look for that thing somewhere else. So maybe you don't trust your beauty. Maybe you don't trust how you cook. Maybe you feel I'm no more good in bed, or something. It could be something very trivial. And insecurities are sometimes something very trivial, an emotional state. So if you have that inadequacy about yourself, you start feeling that person will look for that adequacy or security
in someone else
who has it. And so your patterns is that I'm suspecting you. But like you said, sometimes there's a genuine cause to be suspicious. Mm. There's a genuine cause not to trust someone based on what they've also been showing you. So there's a gray area where you can't tell if this is because someone is genuinely doing something wrong, or because you have an inadequacy about yourself, or you lack some confidence, or you feel anxious about yourself. So you need to actually start appraising yourself and ask yourself, why do I feel this way about someone not answering my call for 2 hours? Why do I get so flustered? Why am I so anxious because you've not answered my call for 2 hours? Why is my world coming to an end because 2 hours you've not answered my call? You know, because you start ruminating and telling yourself all kinds of things you have no facts about. These are part of the things that start marking the white page that we start our relationships on. So the work is more about the person feeling insecure, the person having the suspicion, the person not trusting, because you will continue for a very long time, and sometimes you don't get the answers from the other person.
Great.
So what do you do to make yourself feel safe and mentally stable in a relationship?
Great. Like the bit about feeling inadequate.
Yeah.
For which reason you may start projecting these, your inadequacies, on somebody.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you start looking for faults in the people when probably there isn't fault. I mean, there are no faults. It could also be that indeed, like we're saying, something has happened, not maybe from a previous relationship, but from this very relationship
yeah.
you're in.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, they may have been settled, nipped in the bud. Your partner could be working so hard to ensure that that never happens, and they're doing everything possible, but then you just can't leave that space and you begin to create problems around. Okay. Now let me come to you, PG. Hi, PG.
Hi, Adam. Great. I could hear you perfectly well.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. We're trying to find out, or, you know, discuss how we end up feeling, you know, insecure, how we end up mistrusting and also doubting, you know, and being suspicious of our partners in an amorous relationship or marriage.
Right. Okay. So once again, good morning, Adam. Good morning to your listeners. When it comes to suspicion and insecurity and doubt and all of that mistrust, it could stream or stem from different, you know, sources of our existence. I always say that we are not monochromatic human beings. We are multicolored. We are multifaceted. We are a combination of over 400 external or extended family member traits. And then we also have our social grooming. All of that will come to determine how I see the world. All of this will shape my worldview. So it is unique to me. And sometimes it has nothing to do with my partner. But let us start from my partner. How do I see my partner? Do I see them in the way that shows respect? Because you see, if you respect some people or someone, there are things you won't think about it. I mean, when it comes to those people, you don't associate them with some things. I'm sure we all know that. That simple adage that says, hey, I would have never thought that this person can do this. That goes a long way to tell you how you see the person, you see. But there are some people, it's like whenever you see them, it's like something that triggers you, something that makes you feel a certain type of way. It could be their phone mannerism. It could be their general behavior, their feeling. You know, some people naturally act very secretive and then all of that. So at the end of the day, after you've seen this person, related with the person up to a certain point, you form a certain impression about the person. But like I said, most often it has to do with whether you see the person in the light of respect or you see the person as just anybody. Another thing would also be how the relationship itself started. How the relationship itself started. In my premarital counseling, one question I always ask is, how did you guys start your relationship? Was it that both of you were single and you started dating? Was it that one person was in a relationship and then the two of you were dating simultaneously or, you know, concurrently? And then eventually, the right word is concurrently. Eventually, one person moves from the relationship and start dating you. Once it happens, the other person will never trust you. Because if I can be with you while you are with another man or you are with another woman, you can do the same thing to me. So I was with you when your boyfriend or girlfriend called. I heard the lies you told. So the next time I am on the other side of the phone and I call you and you tell me you are here, you are there, I'm second guessing you. Mm. Because when we were doing it on the side of the loan, I knew the stories you were telling the other person. And most often, that is the source of the insecurity in relationship. So that, you see that most of it is the ladies, right? Pitchy, I don't know what I did. Like, Pitchy, I'm so transparent. I love this guy. I'm like, how did the relationship start? Oh, well, he was in a bad place, or I was in a bad place. And that, you know, so immediately you do that. People, human beings are funny. Someone will bend over for you and will use it to judge them. Because when it comes to us, we feel insecure by what they did. And we fear they will also do the same thing for somebody else. So there is that as well. Then previous relationship. Okay, so there was the bit about what Ariel said, how we see ourselves. If you look down on yourself, trust me, Adam, you will never be good. Nothing somebody else will do for you will be good enough for you. They can cut themselves up for you. They will put their head on a silver plate for you. They will roll on the floor for you. Because you don't see yourself as good enough for them, you would always suspect them. And then again, when we also look at the relationship dynamics that we ourselves have had, if you've dated a high-value person, somebody who knows when to call, somebody who misses your call, or when you call them, they come, they quickly text you, somebody who updates you on what they are doing, wherever they are going and all of that, there is that level of intentionality. There is that level of intensity in that relationship. So everything is pepepe. You are a business person or you are a corporate person. You are busy. You go up and down. You want a partner who understands these dynamics of your life and work with you. So you see, once that relationship ends and you start a new relationship and you're dating somebody who doesn't update you, who doesn't think that it's important for me to tell you where I am, who doesn't think it's important for me to return your call when I see it, you have to call me back again. Like, you know, it kind of makes you feel that you are dating below. And you begin to doubt them. You begin to suspect them. You begin to feel that, wait, if I dated two people who are very open, very communicative, why are you not being communicative? Is there something you are hiding? Could there be that you have a second gig on the side? Could there be something that I don't see? Because why can't you tell me where you are? It's not like I'm coming to track you. I just need to know so that if I have to meet you, if I have to tell you that, okay, let's meet at this place, come here, come there, we can do all of that. Or sometimes just give me the comfort of knowing that my girlfriend is here, my boyfriend is here, they are doing this, they are doing that. It's just part of the general dynamics of the relationship. But I don't see it with you. What are you hiding? So, Adam, there is that as well. And then the final thing I'll say, I know we all have to share. The final thing I'll say is a childhood past and trauma. You know, how you were also raised can raise a lot of doubts and suspicion and insecurities in you. So we are looking at attachment, you know, some form of attachment styles, styles that some people have. They are looking at relationship between children and their parents as they're growing up. We're looking at reward and punishment. We are looking at positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement. We are looking at all of those things. And while we don't know this, it is shaping the person's thoughts. So they easily panic. For instance, you know that when your father calls and you don't pick up, it's world war for you. So when your partner calls, or when you call your partner and they don't pick, you want to give them the same world war because you think there was a reason why your father was doing that. And so now you are bringing it into your own marriage, you know. So, Adam, these, and I'm sure many more, Reverend, I'm sure might have some, that I feel lead to these doubts and insecurities and mistrust in relationships, right?
Another masterclass. We have another masterclass ongoing. You might want to call a friend to tell somebody to tune in right now to Home Affairs. You just may be saving your relationship or your marriage. Reverend Kofi Boateng, on to you now.
Hi, Adam. Good morning, everyone. Good morning to Ariel. Good morning, PG, again. And then good morning to our listeners. Adam, I think the lack of self-worth and lack of self-confidence may cause someone in a relationship to feel insecure and to mistrust their spouse or partner. And these may cause you, and these are some of the dangers of feeling insecure in a relationship, to unreasonably check up on your spouse, to know their whereabouts anytime they are not with you, because you suspect that they may be with someone else or doing something that you don't approve. Then you may also have an innate or unexplained feeling not to trust your spouse, which makes you always second guess them. When they tell you I'm here, you think they are somewhere else. When they tell you I'm not talking to somebody else, or you know, whatever they tell you, you doubt it and you believe that they're doing the opposite. You suspect that they may leave you for someone else or may leave you for whatever reason. And so there's a need for you to keep checking up on them. There's a need for you to keep staying in touch with them, and so on and so forth. And as PG and Ariel rightly said, this may come about as a result of maybe past experiences, maybe unhealthy relationships that you've had in the past. And it could be from your family. It could be from the way your parents treated you, or the way some caregiver treated you. They told you that you're never good enough. Nobody will ever marry you. Nobody will ever be able to stay with you. Or an emotional baggage that you're carrying from a previous relationship, because you dated, or you were married, or you were in a relationship with someone who always lied to you, someone who was unfaithful to you, someone who betrayed you. And you tend to think that everybody else is going to be the same, and this next person that you're, or this new person that you're with, is going to be the same. Ultimately, it could also be the fact that this same person that you're with has betrayed you in the past. They've lied to you a couple of times or a few times. And that makes you think that anything else they tell you, regardless of how true it is, may also be a lie. And they may be planning to be unfaithful, or they are being unfaithful to you. So I think we have to start by looking within us and finding the reasons why we feel so insecure. And then we can take steps to address them.
Okay. Great. How about
If I can just throw in something that Reverend said at the very beginning, but there is a spin-off
about the self-worth and self-confidence.
But it ended in the bit about where your partner, wherever your partner is not, whenever your partner is not with you, you know, you want to call, you want to check, and know all of that, you know. Sometimes, and Reverend said that, you know, these are all evidence of your own insecurities and all of that, which is true. Generally, it's a fact. It's a general truth. However, there is a spin-off, a fringe or an outlier case, which is tied to the person's temperament. And it is unique to melancholics. And it is very important we don't bundle them, we throw them together with the dirty water, as we say, regarding the babies. When you're dealing with a melancholic, melancholics thrive. That is their biggest strength, on information and the adequacy and accuracy of the information. It is not enough that you tell a melancholic, I'm caught up in traffic. They would probe. Oh, sir, you are caught up in traffic. Where, which of the traffic? Oh, it's just general traffic. Yeah, I know, general traffic, but where? I'm in Accra, I'm coming home, babe. That's my route. I understand, love. Where? I want to hear something like I'm around Opebia. I want to hear something I'm around Kalkudi Junction. You know, like, can you be more specific? Because for them, being vague isn't something their mind process. They want specifics. You see? And that is something we cannot downplay. Again, when a melancholic, melancholics believe in promises. So when you tell a melancholic, I'll be there at 2 o'clock, exactly at 2, their world shuts. And they are waiting for you. After 15 minutes, they expect that if you are running late, you text them, hey babe, or hey guy, I'm running a bit late, can we make it like in 30 minutes time? Okay. But if you don't tell them anything, they call you, you don't pick up, then their mind goes in a certain way. That is how their mind process. And then in most of my marriage counseling, when I'm having this, when you go through it and you start talking, the guys are like, oh my goodness, I have hurt my wife for being who she is. I've hurt my husband for being who he is. And it has nothing to do with the person's social upbringing. It is something that is biological, it's innate. And so if the person, if a melancholic is expecting an information, they're expecting to know something about you and you are not giving it, they'll keep probing. So the same question, they'll keep coming back to it again. They'll ask you a question, you give them a vague answer. After an hour, they will ask another question. You realize that there is a long call to action and it is tied to the earlier question they asked you. And then they will press and press till they get what you want. And each time they press, they get more aggressive, they get more wild, more conspiracy theory,
if I can get it, if I can put it that, like that. But it's all because they want the truth. And if you're telling them something that doesn't sit in their own mental processes, they assume you are lying. Because before a melancholic questions you, they would have done a mental sort of an adjustment. If you say you are buying something at the shop and you are coming back in, they are thinking this is a 15-minute trip. Why are you coming back after an hour? So they will expect you to say, oh, when I got there, I met this person. The POS broke down, so I couldn't pay in time. When I got there, this and this and this happened. Oh, I stopped at the filling station to buy fuel. There were a lot of cars. So all of that contributed to my delay. They would want to know that. And if you don't tell them, as trivial as it is, you said you're going to the shop to buy something and come back. You've gone, you've come back. That 45 minutes you cannot explain can lead to a third world war in your home.
PG, so if you're dealing with... Yes, PG.
Yes, sorry. No, I think that basically I was also just, rounded up by saying that if you're dealing with a melancholic, try and have an open mind about some of these things and try and be very accommodating. Otherwise, you always get something wrong.
Yeah. Great. PG, I understand and it's okay. But I think we have had a lot of conversations on temperaments here.
Right.
That in as right. much as this is your temperament, we're also not expecting that you will be so wrapped in it and say that because this is my temperament, and if your temperamental behaviors, because once you can admit that it is your temperament, you also know when it is extreme.
Yeah.
So here you are. Let me make a point. Here you
they
are. You are a melancholic person, and you're married to a sanguine. Mm-hmm. One who also doesn't want to be interrogated and ask questions. I am a lucky, happy go person. Exactly. And so where are you? Chale, I did traffic inside. Oh, and then by the time I am telling you I did traffic inside, there probably is a call coming through and I need to pick it and shout and laugh and be happy. And then you are upset about the fact that I didn't give you a blow-to-blow account of where I am, blah, blah, blah.
In front of
and
me.
Understand. I can totally understand that. But then, since we are in a relationship, I think that, where this can start from will be we also discussing our temperaments and seeing exactly. how we will meet each other halfway. Because
halfway,
saying exactly. that this is who I am, so you have to live according to who I am. Am I also saying that I am a sanguine, so you have to stop probing? No. I know I have to give you some amount. It's not that I'm hiding anything, but it's just a bit too much to be giving you, I am here in the cast. There are about 3 cars in front of me. In the next 2 minutes.
What PG is saying is true, but I think, if you are like that, then it's in there. You need to also know how to balance for your partner to feel comfortable from where they are also coming from.
Exactly.
Because they also have their own temperaments. They also have their own way of
doing
communicating.
Exactly.
So as much as you should be understood for how you view things and you process things, if like I say, you go to the extreme on your partner, then you're also putting them out of balance. Then they also tip off and then it becomes a clash.
True.
So there's always a need for room for each temperament to be able to play. But you can't push yours over another temperament.
But I also want to believe that, PG, before you come in, I also want to believe that if these questions, okay, this is coming out from one line or so for me. If it's about, wanting to really know where you are, checking on you. Look, it's beautiful to have your partner regularly check on you in a way that is not sounding as though they are suspecting you.
Exactly.
I'm interrogating you. Yeah. I'm suspecting you. Hey, babe, what's up? What are you? Where are you today? What's up? What are you doing? How's your day been? Okay. And you're catching up on the person genuinely. It definitely won't come off as you're being suspicious of me and you're trying to track me down and all that. So I believe that. I'm not sure there is a woman who wants to go through the whole day without having their partner check on them a couple of times to go like, hey, what's up with you? Where are you? What are you doing? You would love it, Sometimes the distraction is even very beautiful. In the middle of something then you are distracted like that. It's nice. The way it is done, such that it doesn't come off like, okay, I am suspecting you. Especially so when it is not a situation that calls for any suspicion. We've got to be wise about these things. Reverend Kofi Boateng, what do you think?
Right.
Before I move on, you brought this trouble.
No, I mean, I agree generally with PG on our temperament and how that can cause us to behave in a certain way. But of course, there are people who are not introverts. They are extroverts, but they can be very jealous of their partner and their partner's relationships to the extent that they, anytime their partner is engaging or interacting with someone else, they feel very uncomfortable. They feel that they are being left out. And so you realize that these people have an incessant need to be complimented all the time. They want to be reassured all the time. And really, it may have nothing to do with your temperament. Much as I agree with PG that some people have or behave in a certain way because of their temperament, some people just simply feel insecure for some other reasons other than their temperament. And so they put a lot of burden or pressure on their spouse to continue to reassure them, to continue to compliment them. If you tell them you love them today and you don't say the same tomorrow, they think something is wrong. You know, if they go out with you and you're interacting with other people in a very nice way, or in a very, you seem to be so happy talking to other people, especially where their spouses are or their partners are extroverts and then or more sociable, very outgoing. They see them and they feel jealous. They feel like they're missing out on something, even though they have the opportunity to be in that place at the same time, but they choose not to be. So generally, I think some people just have an innate need to be reassured and to be validated by their spouses in a way that puts a lot of burden on their spouse. And no matter what they do, they may still feel insecure because of their own lack of self-confidence.
Great. PG, did you want to make a point before I move on to my next question?
Yes. I just wanted to make just a little, point here. But first and foremost, we are talking as professionals. You understand? We are talking as professionals. So we assume people know their temperament. That what I said was just the fact that this could be what is happening, what could be the temperament of people. But they themselves, they don't know. So one of the things I normally tell them when they come is, do you know your temperament? If they say they don't know, I take them through the temperament. So they understand basically who each person is. So that's the first point. The next point is, how do we make the adjustments? How do we ensure that the melancholic is moving a little bit from the extremity, the extreme to the middle? The choleric is moving from the extreme to the middle. The sanguine is moving from the extreme to the middle. Adam, there is no relationship without sacrifice and compromise. There is no relationship. And so we all need to make those adjustments. And when we do them, that is where we get the best of the relationship. Most of them, we don't even know why it is happening. All we know is that I don't like that my partner didn't update me. I don't like that this happened. I don't like that that happened. But the why, that is where the problem is. Again, Reverend said something that sometimes you feel uncomfortable when you are being nice to people and all of that. Again, that becomes a little bit of a problem because it becomes a very general statement. How do we define what is comfortable? What is acceptable? What is respectable? Adam, there are married people who are 2 a.m. They are in groups chatting and misbehaving and doing all sorts of things. The question we need to ask ourselves is that, back in the day without phones, will somebody be in your marital bedroom at 2 a.m.? Will somebody be there? No, nobody will be there. So again, it doesn't matter that this is digital. I mean, we're all guilty. We are posting on social media at 2 a.m., at 3 a.m. But really, would you be entertaining people in your marital home, in your bedroom at 2 a.m.? So you see, we need to understand that it might be digital, but it's still the same principle. And as much as we can, let us have the definitions of what is fair. What is fair to all parties concerned? If you say you want to be nice, being nice is what? Getting somebody kiss you on the lip, getting somebody hug you and touch you in an inappropriate way, making unacceptable comments about you. Hey, Charlie, your wife there, you get to see backside, see front side, and your woman is there laughing and giggling and turning herself around. We know that in Ghana, yeah, when people comment about people's body, especially for some... Okay, you let me not go there. I don't want to start a controversy.
Please don't go there. You know, like don't start it. I
don't start a controversy. But you get what the point I'm making.
Yes, I do. I think we all do.
You know, so the boundaries need to be set. Yeah. Exactly. The boundaries need to be set. If you don't, you would think,
You will define what is acceptable to your partner, will define what is acceptable to them, but it is not a relationship. You're both acting single. If we come together, we need to have a third definition of what works for the two of us. And we all need to say that, listen, if we are agreeing on this, it won't work for me. So can we find a middle ground?
Great.
Can we find a place that works for both of us? So that is where we need to get to. Then we can move on from there, right? Thank you. That's what I wanted to ask.
That's perfect. That's not debatable in any way. And I'm just thinking that, look, once every quarter, we probably may have to have conversations on temperaments. Because when we're having some of these conversations, they keep coming up all the time. So probably, Daniela, you might have to note it every quarter. We should have a conversation on dealing with temperaments. For me, it was a light bulb moment for me. And I began to understand a lot of things when Reverend Apidu, right? Yeah. He came to our church and he gave a talk on temperaments. I mean, it was some years ago. There were so many things I wasn't understanding. Yeah. Honestly, I just didn't understand why this boy will behave the way he behaves. I just couldn't fathom. And I was always frustrated, And no way. But when he gave that talk on temperament, I woke up. I'm like,
Mabrekwa.
So this is it. But it didn't end there. Now you will have to learn how to deal with this person.
Yeah.
Because remember that for us young women, when you're getting married, they tell you that, if you have issues with your husband and all that, wake them up at dawn.
And talk to them.
And have a conversation. Hey!
I sleep at 3 a.m. You can't break me at 3 a.m. to discuss my problem.
Did you try it? Did it work?
Hey! Let me leave. I'm sure my reactions explains everything.
I know.
Wake the person up and talk, everything.
Yes, it doesn't work.
You lie bad. This one, you get to talk to him when he's ironing, talk. It's not the come and sit down and let's
formal talking.
It didn't work, and I was very frustrated because I was taught that is how you have to go.
That is how you talk.
And you wanted them to comply to what you know. Ignorance, it's a disease. So I think the temperament conversation, we can't have it enough. It's very important that we regularly do, and you wouldn't just leave it at, this is who you are, but how do you deal with it? Because then, PJ, I want to believe that if you're so stuck in this is my temperament, it just may end up also becoming destructive to yourself.
Absolutely.
And to your relationship. You need to be able to manage it.
You need to manage it and make some sacrifice.
My next thing is for us to look at. So now we understand some of the reasons this very beautiful clean sheets could be dented. We've talked about a lot. Events from your past relationships could be lurking there in the shadow. People having their own inadequacies and they may end up projecting them on you. Again, we talked about events from past relationships. Sometimes they always come back, they play back. It happened this way. I think one of you gave the instance about, this is what we were doing when we were starting off, and you were always lying to this person.
Yeah.
So once I hear lines like that, even if you're not lying, and I like the way PG put it, that sometimes you bend your back for people and they end up using it against you.
Yeah.
So those things are also there. How you see yourself. Are you dating a high-valued person who probably from a previous relationship did things in a certain way? They will personally update you, tell you what's happening in their lives and all that. And then,
I'll call you back.
And then at some point in time, they find themselves with somebody who doesn't want to open up on anything. And then they begin to feel like, what are you hiding? And that can start a whole, world war. So PG talked about intentionality. There are some people who are very intentional. You end up in a relationship with somebody who just does their things anyhow. You just may end up being suspicious of them, not trusting them, having these doubts around them. And then we talked about childhood traumas, your past, your upbringing and all that. All of these things can end up denting your relationship. And then then the elephant in the room that brought about the big discussion, the lack of, you know, self-worth and self-confidence, and how all of these can end up playing up, you know, in your relationship. So having known all of these, I want to find out, before we go into how do you deal with it, I want us to go into how do these things affect your relationship, and how do they affect you as individuals in a relationship? So together as a couple or a would-be couple, how is this affecting you? And how is it affecting you as individuals? And then when we see the impact, then we can talk about, okay, so when you're facing these things in your relationship, how do you go about it? How do you deal with it? Reverend Kofi Boateng, the impact of insecurities, suspicions, and mistrust on the relationship and on the quality of life of the individuals.
Working on yourself.
Oh, Kofi, I'm sorry. Can you start?
Okay, I'm sorry. All right. So your question was on how to deal with
insecurity. It's on the impact. How does this affect the relationship and also affect the quality of life of the individuals?
All right. And you know, there's an adage that the child who would not let his or her parents sleep would not sleep either. So when you are stressing over what your spouse is doing and being so distressful or mistrustful, you yourself will be losing sleep. So it may affect your mental health. And then it also affects the mental health of your spouse or your partner, because you put so much pressure on them. You can guess them on everything they tell you. They have to check in on unreasonably because you have a need for that, not because it is healthy to do so, but you have an unreasonable need for them to be doing these things. So ultimately it may affect the relationship. And one of the things that we do know is that when you fear so much that something is going to happen, it may happen. You know, you think that they're going to leave you, and that's why you're giving them all the pressure. That's why you're giving them all these rules to abide by. At some point, they may just have enough and check out or run away from you. So, yes, it may have a negative impact on the relationship ultimately.
Okay, great. So, bigly will be the impact on your mental health as individuals. Great. And then, you know, you could fear to the extent that you see your fears manifesting.
Yeah.
Great.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Ariel, I'll come to you, but let me talk to PG and then I will come to you. Hello, PG?
It's PG. Hi, Adam.
Should I repeat the question for you?
So you are looking at the impact on the person.
On the relationship. You can take it from anywhere. On the relationship and on the individuals.
Okay, all right. So on the let me start from, you know, on the individual. I think that Kofi has said it perfectly. Reverend Kofi has said it perfectly. Like he said, akola on amenda no sonda. It's in bread. You know, you are stressing the person, you are stressing yourself. But the other side, which normally we don't pay a lot of attention to, is that right through that we drive our partners into the arms of another person. Because sometimes they don't know what is happening. Sometimes they are confused, they are lost. And so there's this office boyfriend who would always want to listen. There's this office girlfriend who would always want to listen. Why, boss, you don't look good. Why, you didn't sleep last night? Chalemu, you ladies, you like to give drama too much. It's not your sister who is giving me drama. And gradually, your sister becomes your rival. Is that from that? I always tell people that really most people don't set out to go and cheat. Most people. It's actually pushed from the home because there's a lot of pressure. And you see, sometimes these things are not even explained to you. I believe when there is a little bit of an explanation, your partner can understand where you are coming from. It is like, do this. I expect this. I don't trust you on this. And sometimes there are no reasons, you know. So that is it. It also tells on your partner's, you know, personal outlook. You know, I mean, if somebody is going through a terrible relationship, especially when where they are coming from was a very laissez-faire, you know, atmosphere. Everybody was okay. Everybody was individual. Everybody was quiet. You know, autonomous. People are doing their own thing. Now it looks like this is a more, you know, intense, demanding relationship. And I have to do this, I have to do that. And I don't know how to do it. Like, it's not in my nature. I wasn't raised
like that. And so it begins to tell on the person. And the more sensitive the person is, the more it shows on them. So you see it, their skin goes bad, their hair goes bad. You know, like whether it's a guy or it's a woman, you know, you see some significant, you know, changes in them. And so that's on the person. But when it comes to the relationship, there is a communication breakdown. You understand? The more we attempt to read the minds of our partners, we end up predicting wrongly or erroneously what we think they are coming to say or what we think they are doing. And so you call your partner, they didn't pick up. You quickly start coming up with a lot of potential reasons. All of them are negative. So what happens when they finally get into your space, or both of you are finally connected and you are talking, your line of conversation, whether it even sounds like a joke, you realize that you are projecting something deep in your mind. And your partner, if your partner is smart, they quickly pick it up that, wait, what are you trying to say? Because I realize you are making joke about this particular issue. Like, are you trying to say something? Just say it. You know, and over time, your partner becomes careful. So when they are talking to you, they edit their thoughts. When they are talking to you, they think carefully before they open their mouth. And it gradually affects the quality of communication that you have. There's also the emotional aspect, which we have talked about. And then there is also the, in the end, it affects intimacy. In the end, it affects intimacy, because once you begin to suspect your partner, most often the suspicion is in the area of infidelity. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm a woman. You don't trust me. You think I've gone somewhere to go and do something. And then on top of that, you know, at 10 p.m., you want to just come and jump on me. No, honey, no, it's not going to happen. I'm tired. I'm sick. Yeah, I'm going to where I went. Where you say you think I went, I'm going there again. You know, I mean, they wouldn't tell you that, but you see it in their behavior. Every day we have headache. Every day we have headache. At least I'm going to cheat. I beg. You just keep there. Stay there. I'll go and cheat. You know, and it affects the quality of relationships sexually, emotionally, communication-wise, even intellectually. We can't discuss things again. We can't have conversations again. Because, Miko Kane, you tell me, where did you get to hear this? Hey, you're always coming up with new ideas. I don't know where you go to hear them from. I don't even see you read, but you always come up with these new wild, wild ideas. You know, Mate, you know, suspecting or saying something to mean that you're talking to somebody as we are taking the mind of people. So that's why your vocabulary or your terminology reflects conversations and things that we don't actually have in the house. You know, and it's weird. People's insecurities can be weird, but ultimately it harms the relationship and it harms both parties. Yeah.
And eventually can lead to the death of the relationship.
Absolutely.
PG can be dramatically blunt. I know, sometimes. Right?
I'm going where I came from.
Where you said I
where
came
did
from.
You go?
I do not say
that. Oh, dear Lord. Ariel.
Yes. Okay, so one of the effects of insecurity and mistrust is the low self-esteem part, which we've mentioned, which means you don't even know your value yourself, and it makes you always doubt yourself. For me, it leads to this living in indecisiveness. You can't make a decision because you don't trust yourself. You are always indecisive. You can't decide because of that lack of value of yourself and not trusting people. It's always difficult to make a decision. And for me, it goes beyond just the relationship. It affects you in every area of your life. Even with your friends, with your sibling, you become this negative person everywhere you go, and you doubt yourself, and you always crowdsource. So to make one decision, you have to talk to 5-10 people. And like I said, yeah, we think, but thinking is not the job. You have to think to make a decision. So if you have insecurities and you doubt yourself, then you are living constantly in this place of should I call him? Shouldn't I call him? You are always unhappy. One of the effects of insecurity is that every day you are unhappy because you are not sure in your body. There's this nagging anxiety you live with that something is going to happen. There's an imposter syndrome. You doubt yourself. Even when you're doing well, even when the relationship is going well, you feel it's not going well because of this imposter syndrome. You feel, I'm a failure. I don't measure up here. I'm not beautiful enough. It can never make you feel okay. So this nagging anxiety makes you an unhappy person. It can lead to all the mental health issues they've mentioned, which means that at the workplace, you're not functioning well. socially with people, you are not functioning well. Intellectually, emotionally, you are not functioning well. Just because you haven't found a way of grounding yourself to know your abilities and your weakness so you feel centered in yourself. So you are always flustered all over the place. And that indecisiveness make it affects how you even treat your children. And then we start passing on these same patterns onto our children, making them also grow up feeling insecure because of how you were feeling when you were raising them. So the impacts of insecurity is a lot. You can't even trust your own decision, and it leads to missing opportunities. When opportunity comes for you to make a decision, because you don't trust yourself, because you feel insecure, you are afraid to try new things. You are afraid to step out of your comfort zone. So you always keep a small life. You live in, you live in a little world of this insecure person. You don't venture out of your comfort zone. You don't take risk. You don't trust that I can do something new. You always want it to be the same old way. But the same old way will not let you grow. To grow, there needs to be change. And change is what you are afraid of because you want things to go in a particular way. So this continues for a very long time, and it affects all the other areas of your life, not just the relationship. So insecurity is not something that when you have impacts only your partner. No, it goes in all other dimensions of your life. And it's something that we need to assess ourselves and start knowing our weaknesses, our strength, and come into balance with who we are.
Ah, Ariel.
Yes, madam.
You have spoken.
Sir?
No, because see, all the things that, you guys have mentioned here, perfect, right? I was going to talk about the fact that you can find yourself really withdrawing.
Yeah.
Because you always want to do things that will only please this person.
Yeah.
And you put it aptly by saying that you end up finding yourself living in the little world of this person. Because until it is done their way, it is wrong.
Yeah.
If it is not done, so you're walking on eggshells, and you mentioned a lot of things. You know, you're afraid to take risks.
Yeah.
You end up not growing because...
You won't grow.
You just want to be perfect for them, and anything outside of that will affect your general well-being.
Yeah.
So we've talked about your mental health, which Kofi mentioned, and he also talked about the fact that you can live in fear to the extent that your fears are manifesting.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's not even real, but you can see them happening in front of you.
It will manifest real, actually. It will manifest because you keep accusing someone so much that it also becomes their functioning.
Yeah.
You know? And the way the mind works, what you keep putting out there, it's like the mind is recording it. When you tell yourself, I want a red car, everywhere you go, you start seeing red cars.
It's true.
So that's how the mind is created. And for me, one thing that helped me to understand myself well is understanding how the mind works. So there are a lot of things I don't want to know, I don't want to see, I don't want to hear. I create my boundaries like that because what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing becomes an information that my awareness starts running around with. And that starts giving me, stories. You start creating stories around them. So if you start looking at it from that aspect, when you start telling the person, and when I call you, you don't answer, you are doing this, you are doing this. Indirectly, you are also putting that into their subconscious mind. They are not consciously taking it, but the subconscious is always taking everything that is going around.
Right.
Now, it pops into their mind. Oh, I can do this. Unconsciously. So if the other person is not conscious, then you are actually influencing them to start doing the things you are accusing them of doing.
Right.
And that is how the mind works.
And PG talked about the fact that you can push your partner away into the arms of some other person because they never find solace and comfort with you. And, they're not doing what you're saying they're doing. And so they can't even have decent conversations with you because every time they start something, you start pointing at something that you are being suspicious or you are being insecure of. And so then there is the need to now start talking to somebody who will probably... For lack of a better word, listen to you make you feel like you're not going mad, validate you, and then before you realize, you start finding solace with them, and a lot can happen. And then, I mean, PG talked about a lot of things, and I put it together as you end up losing your shine.
Yeah.
You know, there's breakdown in communication. When they want to talk to you, they edit their thoughts. Like, you know, I'm sure people will even end up putting apps on their phone to edit what they want to say to you. Intimacy is also affected, and then that can lead to infidelity. Ariel talks about indecisiveness. You end up not being able to make any decisions for yourself at all. You're perpetually unhappy. You miss opportunities. You're always living in fear, and so you end up not taking risk, and you don't grow. And I talked about the fact that you just find yourself withdrawing and wanting to consistently please this person, because if they are not happy, then you are not happy, and you can't be happy outside of their world, you know. So all of these can happen to you, and I want to believe that we're talking about this. This is a proper contest. We are talking about this where these things remain just suspicions, insecurities, and mistrust. We're looking at the situation where there is actually no grounds for proof in these things, okay?
Yeah.
If you are actually doing these things and your partner is being suspicious of you and they are not giving you peace, that one you can't come and complain, because you know that you are in it. So we are not talking to you, or we are not talking about you. We're talking about, I mean, a partner who just can't put their thoughts together, and they are constantly putting you under stress because they themselves are insecure.
Osro.
They just don't trust you, because things have happened to them before that makes it difficult for them to trust anybody, and they are constantly suspicious of anything that anybody does. That's the person we are talking about. Not you, who is actually doing the things and hiding them, and your partner has clues about them. This conversation is not for you.
Okay.
So now that we have established all of these things, we've looked at how it happens, we've looked at how it impacts the relationship, we're moving on to now talk about how it ends up, how to deal with it now. So if I live with such a person and I'm beginning to manifest all these negative things that are affecting the quality of my life, affecting the relationship, and probably gradually pushing you into the acts of, you know, infidelity and all that. PJ, I have a question for you, like a research. Don't answer it now, right? I hear PJ is off. He'll come back. But let me put out the question anyway. He was talking about the fact that back then, when there were no phones and there was no digital, 3 a.m., will you find people in your room and be chatting with them? But I still want to find out, back then, 3 a.m., when they are not sleepy, what were they doing? When your partner is asleep and you are not sleepy, what do you do?
But it could still be in your thoughts. You could still be entertaining some ideas and not act on them. So...
You know those times the TV stations in the close at midnight.
Yeah,
so the TV is closed.
The TV is closed.
Well, what are you doing with your time? Anyway, so we move on to talking about dealing with these things. And Ariel, let's start with you.
Dealing with insecurity. I mean, if you find yourself insecure, or you find yourself having a partner who is insecure. If you have insecurity and what we are sharing resonates with you, the first place of call is to start checking your mindset, your beliefs. What makes you have that belief that if somebody, I mean, doesn't do this, it means that. That belief that you have, why do you think so? Your belief system is the first place of call to go. Why do I believe these things that I believe that is making me think everybody else is out there to get me?
Mm.
Me alone. Your belief system. That is where you go. And if you want to challenge your belief system, you need to be a very, very intentional person to ask yourself questions. You need to start building self-awareness. Why do I think the way I think? Why do I feel the way I feel? Why do I behave the way I behave? How does this thought, behavior, impacts the people in my life? Sometimes we don't know how our behaviors are also affecting people in our own lives, the way we think and behave and and process things that come up. So if you want to look at why you are insecure and do something about it, check your belief system. Why do you think the way you think? Why do I have this closed mindset that if you don't answer or you don't show up in 30 minutes, then it means you have done something wrong? And start with practicing self-acceptance. Accepting ourselves is the major work we all have to do. That with my weaknesses and my strengths, I belong. I matter. I'm good enough. I am not a failure. I'm alive. I'm good. I can show up fully as I am. That is the biggest work we have to do to overcome insecurity. Accepting ourselves. Self-acceptance. Because if you don't accept yourself wholly, fully as you are, that is where the inadequacy comes from. That is where the lack of self-worth comes from. That is where the lack of confidence comes from. I don't measure up. I don't have this. I don't look like that. My hair doesn't look like this. She looked at the leg. He is this. They are that. They are looking at me. I don't have that dress. What is the next jewelry? What is the next shoe? All these things is because you don't accept yourself as you are in this right minute moment. Not how you are going to be tomorrow, but how you are now, where you are now. This is you. And if you can't make peace with it, then you are in turmoil. You are in a fight with your own self. And when you are fighting yourself, it means everybody else that shows up, you think they don't like what you are fighting about yourself. So how can you have compassion and have kindness for yourself and start believing in the qualities that you have? Maybe your quality is you can speak. Maybe your quality is you can cook. You have some quality. There's nobody here who doesn't have some strength and weaknesses. Everybody has. Look at your strength. Look at your weakness. Have a balance between the two, so that you can feel safe in yourself. If you don't feel safe in yourself, you can't feel safe anywhere. So the work starts with identifying your belief system and then having self-acceptance, looking at yourself in a very compassionate way and accepting yourself as you are.
Great. Thank you very much, Ariel. Okay. Before talking about the accepting, you talked about checking your belief system.
Yeah,
I think that you should actually be starting from accepting and acknowledging the fact that
you have a problem. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if you accept and it resonates with you, then check your belief system.
Finding out why you're so paranoid, why you behave the way you behave, and then why you're so extreme. And then we go back to the self-acceptance, right? That this is who I am.
Yeah.
If it is actually being destructive to me and my partner, then what do I do about it? You know, and not wanting... I mean, you talked about accepting yourself as you are now.
Yeah.
And being the best you can be.
Yeah.
And you should have compassion for your own self.
Have compassion for yourself,
And you should be able to manifest your best qualities.
Yes.
Other than focusing
on your low qualities you don't like. Yeah.
And then you end up feeling insecure about them. And then you project it on
the people.
Please clap for yourself.
Hey, I've been giving 100% to them.
Oh, dear. I worry you people don't find me. Okay, Kofi.
I'll look at it in three ways, and to start with, I agree with Ariel. You have to do some introspection. It starts with you. A lot of these things that you fear, all the mistrust, the suspicions, the insecurity may just reside in your thoughts. So you need to check and figure out what triggers these feelings of insecurity and mistrust and so on, and then begin to think positively about the things that makes you feel insecure. So for instance, if it's because you haven't heard from your spouse or your partner, you believe that they're doing something untoward or something detrimental to your relationship, you begin to think that just because they are not with you doesn't mean that they're out there doing something bad. Secondly, we need to learn to communicate in an open and honest way. Share your feelings about how you feel about maybe your spouse may have lied to you in the past, or you simply feel insecure. That is when you have come to accept that you have an issue, you have a problem. Share your thoughts with your spouse. Tell them how you feel when you don't hear from them. Tell them how you feel when they've been dishonest with you, or tell them how you feel when you simply think certain thoughts about them because they are not with you. And then listen to them in an open way, by giving them the benefit of the doubt, because they may have good reasons for behaving the way they do that will make sense to you, so that you don't think those negative thoughts about them and about everything else that they do. And then thirdly, seek help where you feel that you have tried everything, you have communicated, you have done your introspection and all of it. From a trusted counselor, a relationship coach, or a therapist, I'm sure that they can help you to reset your thoughts and to begin to think positively and not have all these negative thoughts about your relationship.
Thank you very much on that one as well. So introspection, and then you come in again to accept that you have a problem. And then once you have accepted it, you want to now be able to share with your partner. I think that's a very, very, very good point. Didn't think about it. But if you can, as much as tell this person that this is how I feel when you're not around, this is how I feel when you are dishonest towards me, this is how I feel when this happens, I think that's like that's a very big winning point. You know, if you can come to the point where you can actually talk about it to your partner, and if you both want to make the relationship work, then your partner is reasonable enough to hold your hands and tell you that I understand, we can work it through. Kofi, at that point,
empathy.
I don't even think that you need a friend to say the help of a professional, because this is between the two of you. And if, like
that
you mentioned,
true.
If your partner is empathetic towards how you feel, and because they are your partner and they know you, they probably know where you're coming from and why you may be feeling this way, then they will take on the burden with you and work with you through it. Other than
Exactly.
Kofi, please, you two clap for yourself. Thank you so much. And finally, from you, PG, how do we deal with these?
Okay, all right. So, please, can you hear me? I had
yes,
a
very well,
challenge.
Very well. We have about 5 minutes.
Right, okay, sure. So, what I would say, today, I realize that we've looked at this conversation from the insecure person's, you know, perspective. I've seen they need to work on themselves. And I think that, you know, insecure people's life matters. So I'm also trying to take it from their perspective. And I feel that for us to deal with this fairly, one of the things we need to do is to build trust. Okay. You need to build trust by being consistent in your actions. Yes, your partner may be insecure and have their own problem, but how are you fueling that insecurity? Your actions, it's not one way. People just don't work on themselves. Any problem in a relationship is two-sided. You don't expect one person to work on themselves and the other person is having a field day. If there is a problem in the marriage, it is two ways. Even if it's 10% your fault and 90% my fault, when you fix your 10%, you'll be shocked at the changes that will take place in my 90%. So let us be intentional about doing things that generate or build trust.
PG,
be consistent in your actions.
PG,
inconsistencies don't help anyone.
PG, let me borrow two more minutes to your time and ask you this question whilst you answer it. So, you know, from the beginning, I talked about the fact that...
Sorry, Adam, I'm listening.
Yeah, I'm saying that I'm borrowing two more minutes because I'm asking you, I'm doing a follow-up question to what you're saying now, right?
From
the beginning, I mentioned that sometimes these things may have happened. Whatever it is that is making your partner feel insecure may have happened, right? And genuinely, you have talked about it and you're taking steps to make sure that things work out. And like you're saying, we're looking at the situation where the person genuinely is being consistent in their actions towards rebuilding trust and everything. But every step you make still doesn't make sense to this person. And
Okay. Adam, sorry, I understand that. I missed that because I was offline.
Okay,
so yes, I missed that. Okay. So that is clear. All right, then, let's say my earlier point is quite, redundant. So
remember, I
guess
mentioned,
I'll go
I,
with
remember I mentioned
what,
that. PG, can you hear me? Remember, I mentioned I mentioned also that if you're doing the things and you're hiding them and your partner is being suspicious of it, we're not even talking about you. We're talking about this other person who has genuinely accepted that I have done wrong, I have lied to you, I've done A, B, C, D, and I am taking genuine steps and being consistent with my actions to ensure that we are building, we're rebuilding this thing, especially so when you have accepted that we can rebuild it. And all you keep doing is suspecting me, distrusting, and then pulling me back. That's the person we are talking about.
Okay. So, Adam, there is a place for faith and religion. Forgiveness, right? What does our faith teach us? You know, we learn to forgive. We learn to, you know, move on and turn on a new chapter. So long as the person is doing what is consistently expected to be done in a way that builds trust. If that is being done, then yes, you would have to work on yourself. You have to work on your forgiveness. You would have to work on your faith. You would have to work on things that you know is moral and ethically right for you to do to bring some peace. Sometimes I think that we do that just to punish our partners. It's like, apology is not enough. You know, you need to be punished for what you've done. And so sometimes we stretch the issue, you know, unduly. The other thing I would also want to say is that sometimes the two of you need to go through therapy. It's not enough for people to self-heal. Sometimes it is not enough. Yeah. I mean, if you get a blade cut, you can self-heal. You can just, you know, put on a bandage and then do whatever, and then you are fine. But if you had a metal rod impale you from the back to the front, I mean, how are you going to heal yourself? You need help. You understand? So depending on the nature of the event that led to the chain reaction of suspicion, doubt and mistrust, if it is of a certain nature, don't attempt to fix it yourself, because your partner can do everything and you will never still, you know, move past it, because there are specific tools that you are not equipped to have to deal with that. So you seek therapy, you seek help, you seek a professional. Don't talk to a random person. Again, that's a mistake we all do. We like to talk to random people about our random problems, which sometimes they are of a professional nature, or the solution is of a professional nature. So let's do that. And I think that, you know, we'll be fine. So yeah, for me, these two things, you know, in addition to what has been said.